good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to episode 4 of the Musical Weeb podcast. I'm your host, Rico, also known as the Musical Weeb. And I'm be honest, I'm kind of surprised that I've made it all the way to episode 4 consistently every Saturday, like I promised. Like I said, this is something I kind of made a goal for myself, you know, something I really wanted to, you know, challenge myself to do was be consistent with, you know, something creative. Because as the title of the podcast suggests, I am somewhat musical. I'm a music producer also. I make a lot of hip hop beats and, you know, all the various subgenres that fall under hip hop. And even then, like, I don't make beats every single day. And further still, I don't really release music like that. I have like one or two beats out right now. I should get better at that, but I'm kind of perfectionist when it comes to making beats and all that kind of stuff. I don't really feel like my beats are good enough, you know, to, you know, put out there like that, but, you know, something I should get better at. But this podcast, I'm actually kind of surprised that I've been able to kind of do it every Saturday for 4 weeks in a row now. So hopefully this continues and we make a full calendar year. Going on to what's in my rotation as far as video games, anime, or music goes. As far as video games go, I have been playing a little bit of Elden Ring. I've gotten a little bit further in that. I actually just found the Berserk Sword in Elden Ring, which I guess is like a little fun Easter egg that you can find Guts' sword from Berserk in Elden Ring. Probably also is, you know, a little homage and tribute to Kentaro Miura, the creator of Berserk, who unfortunately passed away. And also, if I'm not mistaken, you can actually kind of get the Berserk armor that Guts wears in Berserk. But it's not a one for one. It's just kind of a, you know, a tip of the cap, you know, a little nod to Guts. Because it's not exactly one for one, the exact armor. But it's still cool nonetheless that you can actually kind of create a Guts, you know, S character in Elden Ring. Which it also kind of makes sense because I can see a lot of the Berserk influence in Elden Ring. So been making my way through Elden Ring. It's still fucking hard. It still infuriates me. But like I alluded to in previous podcasts, the fact that it is open world, if I come across a boss or, you know, a section that's too hard, you know, I'll just run away and, you know, go do something else, something that's a little bit more my speed or my level, you know, get better, then, you know, eventually come back and, you know, move further on. If any of you play Elden Ring, if you want to give me some tips, I would appreciate that, because one thing I'm having a little trouble with, I don't know, it's a weird thing with me in video games, I like to have the full map layout for me. In Elden Ring, you have to actually find like pieces of maps, or you'll find maps to show you the layout of like a certain area or section, whatever. So it's like I found the map for like kind of like the first general area, but after that, like if I keep going further, it's just blank. Like it's just blank. And me personally, I like to have the full, you know, map layout. Like when I would play Assassin's Creed, whenever I got to a city, before like I even did the main story or any side quest in the city, I went to each vantage point to fill out the map so I got the layout of the land. I don't know, I'm just weird like that, I guess. I like to, you know where I'm at, have the layout so I can plan accordingly. Like, okay, let me, if this happens, I can go this way to get there, or, you know, or maybe I can do this quest here, and then once I'm done, I go back to that point, go to, you know, just kind of playing out like that. But been playing Elden Ring. As far as anime goes, actually, to some of your surprise, I haven't watched any anime this week, surprisingly. I have been watching some TV shows, though. I actually watched the first two episodes of this show on Netflix. It's called Tokyo Vice. It's about a Nihongu, or foreigner, reporter who is from America, but he goes over to Japan to become a reporter for one of the top Japanese newspapers. This story takes place, you know, in the 90s, the 90s of Japan, and he actually ends up on the police beat, which, you know, he reports on the crimes or whatever happens in Tokyo. And the way society works in Japan is way different than how society works here in the West, especially in America. Like, for example, in Japanese workplaces, it's seen as an honor, or, you know, your duty to do the very best that you can, you know, love your company, do all this stuff. Like, it's so bad to the point where you actually get looked down upon if you take, you know, a vacation or whatever. And I mean, when I say vacation, I mean you went through the proper channels, you put in the request, you got the time approved, whatever, you cashed in your vacation days, whatever. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, just not showing up to work, or, you know, just calling out that day, unless it's, you know, it's a strenuous circumstance or whatever. But in Japan, if any of that happens, you're actually looked down upon, not only by management, but your fellow co-workers, because work is first, above anything else. Like, they see, you know, when you get off of work, go to bed or whatever, that's seen as your downtime. You know, they don't believe in, you know, the privilege of, you know, like, for us, for example, in the West, when we get off of work, you know, we're allotted, you know, granted, sometimes not as much time as we would like, but we're granted enough time than some other, you know, like in Japan. Like, for example, like 2-3 weeks ago at my day job, like, we got an influx of work, and we were working, you know, 12-hour days, you know, Monday through Friday. You know, that's 60-hour weeks, and I have to be at my job at 4 in the morning. And from where my job is at, and from where I live, if I want to get there, you know, at decent time, I wake up at 2:30 in the morning, because I've always been like this. I'm not the kind of person that as soon as I wake up, I can just roll out of bed, get going. No, I need at least, you know, like 30 minutes of, you know, playing on my phone or, you know, whatever, to kind of wake up, you know, get my brain somewhat jump started. You know, I'll watch a YouTube video or two, you know, scroll through Twitter or Instagram, whatever, you know, something to, you know, and also work up the will to live and get out of bed. Like, stuff like that. And if I want to get to bed on a decent time, I try to be in bed by 7, fall asleep by 7:30. So by the time I wake up at 2:30, that gives me at least like 7 hours of sleep. You know, if I get off work, 12-hour days for me, I get off at 4:30. I get home like around 5:30, 6 sometimes. So really, I only have like an hour and a half sometimes to, you know, I eat, I shower, and I might, you know, be able to watch like an episode or two of the anime or whatever. In Japan, they're lucky if they even get that. You know, there's some companies where, like, they will literally work you to death. I'm talking about like 18 hours, whatever. And, you know, shockingly, they see that as a privilege and an honor to work for those companies. You know, the work culture in Japan is vastly different from the West. And that's just one aspect of Japanese society that differs from the Western / American society. So this reporter, you know, here in America, if we see someone, you know, is stabbed or whatever, and they're lying there on the floor, we could put two and two together. Homeboy was murdered. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Homeboy was murdered. You know, it's not like he just fell on the knife or whatever. Or at the very least, it was accidental manslaughter or something like that. And Japan, they don't. Like, the cop tells the reporter, because the reporter, he got chewed out for, you know, kind of insinuating that, or saying that homeboy got murdered, where in Japanese newspapers, literally, they just want the reporters to copy and paste the police report. That's it. Which is crazy, because you would think, you know, reporter, you know, you want to add a little bit more journalistic flair to it, you know, inquire into the situation, something. But these Japanese newspapers, they just want the reporters to copy and paste the police report. That's it. Homeboy put that the dude was murdered and he got chewed out. So he starts talking to one of the police officers, like, hey, yo, like, how do reporters and police, you know, work together? You know, how does it work? And the police officer straight up told him, there is no murder in Japan. He's like, what? You heard me. There is no murder in Japan. Because if there's murder in Japan, then people start to panic. Then the whole system, you know, starts to be shaken up, and we can't have that. So there's no murder in Japan. And it's just stuff like that. That's so crazy. It's crazy and interesting at the same time to see how, you know, cultures can differ like that, you know. Whereas, you know, being born here in the West / you know, the United States, you know, something like that, you know, it's just common sense that, you know, homeboy was murdered. But over there in Japan, I'm pretty sure that they can put two and two together that he was murdered, but they rather stay in the mindset of ignorance is bliss. If we don't say he was murdered, then we can just go about our day and act like he wasn't murdered. If we act like he wasn't murdered, then by further extent, we can act like crime really isn't that much of a thing. Which to some extent is true, you know, compared to crimes that the crime rate here in America, the crime rate in Japan is extremely, extremely low. Water break, y'all, water break. So, been watching that. I watched the first episode of the Game of Thrones spinoff, The House of Targaryen, and I enjoyed it. Listen, I loved Game of Thrones, but that last season ruined it for me. Because the whole point of Game of Thrones was, you know, finding out who in the end, amongst all this, you know, espionage, treachery, betrayal, you know, in this show, who will end up at the end of the Iron Throne. And if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, don't watch it. As someone who is like a big fan of it, and then when the last season happened, it straight up ruined it for me. Like, honestly, it did, you know, to the point where I'm like, dog, don't even watch it. Because when you watch it and you get to the end, it's like, then what was the point of everything else? And I was watching it, you know, as it was like somewhat airing. Like, I jumped onto it like around when season 5 was airing. And when I got to like season 8, I think that was like the last season or whatever. You know, to get to season 8, that was like years of buildup, you know, years of, you know, being with these characters, years of building up these plot lines and stuff like that. And for some of these plot lines that I've been building for like years on end to be resolved in one episode, that should give you a red flag right there. So, but this spinoff, it's about the Targaryens. It's set about like 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones. And it's really interesting, you know. And I love, you know, the fantasy genre. As some of y'all know, I'm a big, you know, Dungeons and Dragons nerd. Like, I have like a giant ass stack of Dungeons and Dragons books, like sitting like right next to me. And even on the last podcast, I talked about, you know, my latest Dungeons and Dragons pickup, which was the Spelljammers book set. So I love, you know, like the fantasy genre and all that kind of stuff. And even like Lord of the Rings, I've only watched the first Lord of the Rings movie so far. I still gotta watch the other two, which I'll get around to it. But goddamn, those movies are long, bruh. And I'm not watching the director's cuts right now. Nah, screw that. The director's cut, bruh, those shits are like 3-4 hours long, dog. If you want to watch all three of them, the director's cut, you gotta put aside like a whole ass day, and I literally mean a whole ass day. But I will eventually get to it, because I really did like the first movie, The Fellowship of the Ring. So I'm a big fan of the fantasy genre, and if you like Lord of the Rings, if you're into fantasy, and even if you haven't watched you know, Game of Thrones, or even familiar with it, I would still kind of recommend, you know, watch the new one, House of Targaryens, because you really don't need any you know, past prior knowledge, or even like any context to really get into it, since it's set so far back in the past of Game of Thrones that their stories don't really interconnect or you know, overlap or anything like that. So I would kind of recommend watching it, or at least, you know, give the first episode a watch. If it's like, eh, this ain't my thing, I get it, bro, don't sweat it. Music that's in my rotation, I've been listening to a lot of retro wave music / Outrun music, which it's pretty much like a niche genre right now, which, well, maybe not niche, it's somewhat popular, but it's pretty much, you know, people today kind of recreating, you know, music from the 80s, you know, like the 80s, you know, soundtracks to movies, you know, video games, you know, those kind of sounds, you know, that kind of, you know, soundscape. I've listened to that kind of stuff a lot. If you have Spotify, I recommend, you know, listening to the Retrowave / Outrun playlist that Spotify curated themselves. It's just real good, you know, if you like that 80s sound, and if you just like want, you know, like kind of like an 80s like background noise playlist, throw that on. It's good for active listening and good, you know, for chilling around the crib, or, you know, good for, you know, spray on the background and, you know, doing other things or whatever. Beyond that, I've been still listening to that new JID album, The Forever Story. Man, so far I think it's my like one of my albums of the year, you know. Just the album is so great, from the first real track, Radar, which it's like three different like beat switches, you know, the beat switches like three different times in JID. Like other artists, like when the beat switches, you know, it's very apparent because they change their flow like really hard, you know, it's like a hard change or whatever. But JID, he does it so effortlessly and so smoothly that you don't even catch it right away. It's like, wait, did he change his flow? Like, and still, you know, rapping fast, and not only rapping fast, he's actually spitting, you know, really like clever double entendres, you know, metaphors, whatchamacallit, and like just crazy bars. Of course, my favorite track off the album is Can't Make You Change, featuring Ari Lennox. Man, Ari Lennox, She's also another signee to Dreamville, J. Cole's record label, same record label that JID is under. Yo, she was singing on that joint. She was singing, and the sonic texture to the song, it had like a real like southern soulful sound to it, kind of like a Curtis Mayfield or like a I'm blanking on the name, but you know, it's that soulful southern sound, kind of reminiscent to like, you know, old, you know, southern hip-hop, like old school Outkast, kind of reminiscent to that track Funky Ride, like stuff in that kind of vein. And the Jid's verses, the way he, you know, he was floating on like rhyming over the beat, and you know, like I said, Ari Lennox's vocals, they were crazy. And then when it gets to like the bridge where Ari Lennox and JID like start harmonizing, like that's probably like my favorite moment in the whole album, because for one, it just sounds so beautiful, and also the bridge is just so catchy. It's like baby don't leave, you're all I need, and if you stay then I'ma change my ways. Like that's just so catchy. I'm sorry for my terrible singing. I'm a producer, I'm not an artist. I stay behind the boards because I know my place. I cannot sing, I cannot rap, I can't write lyrics to save my life. I don't think I need to say anything further. My other favorite track on the album, Just In Time, featuring Lil Wayne and Kenny Mason. Wow. The first verse from JID was crazy. The flow and the, you know, the energy and aggression coming from the beat, you know, it just made for a really hype song. And then I feel like what happened is JID sent the track to Lil Wayne with his first verse already on it, and Lil Wayne heard it and was like, okay, I know what I need to do. I actually need to try on this one. And oh my god, Lil Wayne brought it on that track. He brought it. I had that was like reminiscent to Mixtape Wayne. That shit was crazy. And then the third verse, Jid came back, and there was only like 30 seconds left in the track, but he is like spitting at such like a rapid fire pace and still like putting out crazy bars. It was just mind blowing. My only gripe with the album is that the real outro song is not on the album. If you look at it on Spotify, Apple Music, or whatever, the last song listed is Louder 2, which is a great song and even works good as a closer, but JID released the song like a week prior to when the album came out. It's a song called 2007. And if you watch on YouTube, there's like a little like handwritten note, and he says like this was supposed to be, you know, the closer for the album, but due to sample clearance, you know, we couldn't, you know, put it on the album. And I recommend, you know, listen to the album, and then after you listen to Louder 2, go listen to 2007, because it is the perfect closer. It's kind of reminiscent to like Last Call, kind of like his last call from Kanye West College Dropout, pretty much laying out the story of how he came up, you know, from his upbringing, you know, how he used to play college and football, how when he came back because of some stuff, he decided, you know, I'm gonna take rapping seriously. And his dad, you know, it's like, either you get a degree or you get a job, you know, if you want to live here. And JID was pretty much like, I do have a job, rapping is gonna be my job. And his dad's like, all right, that's what you want to do, get out of my house. And you know, JID was like living in his car that, you know, his granny gave him, you know, pretty much like how he came up. And if you're creative or an artist, or you know, or even, you know, if you just like a work a regular 9 to 5, there's, you know, some inspiration to be heard out of that track, you know. The drive and the feeling that Jid had in order, you know, to keep going, even when, you know, everything seemed pretty bleak, when the chips were down, you know, he stayed true to his beliefs, stayed true to, you know, his passion, and, you know, he had the foresight and the strength of mind to keep believing that this will work. Even if it won't, I'll make it work. You know, I feel like that's, you know, a mindset that we can all apply to our day-to-day lives. Whether, you know, if you're not doing good at your job right now, you know, you can take that mindset of, you know, things aren't going good right now, but I'll make them good. You know, I'll do my best, you know, I'll do what I have to do, you know, to make this right, or, you know, make my situation better for myself. You know, I feel like, you know, that's a mindset we can all benefit from right now, especially in these trying times. Moving on to topics, this time starting with gaming topics. Madden NFL 23 recently came out, and drum roll please, ladies and gentlemen, it is dog shit. Yes, you heard me right. Madden NFL 23 is dog shit. It is straight booty cheeks. It and what's funny is like the EA Sports, the people who developed this game, they literally one of the top brass literally said, this is going to be one of the most optimized and most smooth NFL Madden NFL games that we put out in a very, very long time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is far from the case. The game is buggy, you know, it crashes, there's a ton of glitches. I think I even saw they reused some assets from the previous game. It is quite literally a case of copy and paste. And even the copy and paste, there was a malfunction in between, so some of the shit didn't translate over that well, so it starts crashing, there's a bunch of bugs. It is just in the piss poor state right now. It's so bad that actual pro athletes are shitting on it. The NFL Giants receiver, Darius Slayton, he's like, yo, this game is trash. Mecole Hardman of the Kansas City Chiefs had, you know, some very colorful things to say. Overall, the game is just really, really bad. And it's sad because I can already see that a bunch of, you know, I've already seen the discourse, you know, these sports fans, diehards, they're like, no, this game is good, it's great, you know, it's this and that. It's like, dog, you're the reason why gaming is in such a bad state, because y'all keep selling for subpar product. You know, they're asking you to spend a premium price of $70. Yeah, games aren't $60 anymore. They're $70 now. With these like new gen, you know, PS5 versions, they're $70 now. You paid $70 for a video game. The least, the very fucking least they can do is make a game that works upon release. No, you know, oh, they'll fix it later, oh, they'll patch it up. No, the game has to work at the very least the day of launch. You know, if there's, you know, a little bit of bugs, or, you know, there's some optimization needs to happen, that's fine. But if the game, there's major bugs, major glitches, you know, some things just don't outright work, that is just purely unacceptable. You know, as consumers, we have to put our foot down at some point. You know, at the end of the day, you know, your power as a consumer is your money. is your wallet? You know, if you don't want, or if you don't like the way a product is, you know, being put out, or, you know, the state you like a product, you know, don't give the company your money. That's the only way they'll listen to you. If you keep giving them your money, you're pretty much telling them, oh, either they like it, or, you know, they're fine with us, you know, giving them a subpar product. So let's just keep doing it, you know, minimal effort, maximum profits. Hey, works out for us. No, we gotta put our foot down, because it's already becoming an epidemic in the video game industry with a lot of these video game companies doing this. They put out a game, it's in a buggy state, and like, oh, we'll fix it later. No, dog, if I'm paying top dollar, I expect a top dollar experience, at the very least a stable experience. So hopefully, you know, things get better for Madden. You know, hopefully, you know, they can take this as, you know, a wake-up call, but they're not. I already know EA, I already know Madden, all those sports games, they don't give a shit. They're just gonna keep, you know, putting out subpar products, and, you know, people gonna keep buying them, and people gonna keep spending, you know, $100,000 on, you know, their loot boxes, and, you know, their ultimate teams. You know, that's just the way it is now. It's sad to see the state gaming's in, but that's where we're at. Another game that the reviews came out for it, The Last of Us Part 1 Remake for PS5. The Last of Us 1, being a game that was originally for the PS3, fantastic game, by the way, fantastic game, fantastic story, fantastic gameplay. The original, when did the original come out? Let me fact check this real quick, y'all. Let me open up my iPad. Go to Google. Good old Google. When did The Last of Us 1 release? And The Last of Us came out June 2014, 2013. So, 9 years after the original release, we're getting the, you know, the next gen upgrade, the PS5 upgrade. There was a remastered from PS3 to PS4, which I own, and, you know, I played through it all the way. I loved the game, you know, it was a great game. You know, great story, great gameplay, and really great graphics too. And Naughty Dog announced, you know, earlier that, you know, they were gonna remake The Last of Us Part 1 for PlayStation 5, and the game looks great. It looks like a PS5 game. It looks incredible, you know, from the way the textures look. You know, they're utilizing, you know, the new ray tracing technology that the PS5 offers, which ray tracing, for those who don't know, ray tracing means, like, for example, if you look in a video game, if you look at a window in the video game, it actually shows like a reflection, like an actual like reflection, you know, and like pretty much just like a lot of, you know, internal like gaming mechanics that goes on to give it like that perfect, you know, like reflection, as if you were looking in a mirror yourself in real life type thing. And the game looks amazing. They didn't really update the gameplay, which I saw some people complaining about that. In my opinion, there really wasn't that much to like improve on. The gameplay was already, you know, pretty optimized and pretty solid to begin with. But where I will agree with everyone else is the price. As I said, the original came out 9 years ago, and we're getting the PS5, you know, upgraded version of it, which, if we have to pay, I understand that, but the price they're asking for, hell no, they gotta lower that down. They're asking, you know, full price. They're asking for $70 for a remaster of a game that is 9 years old. And I get, you know, they gotta recoup the time they put into developing it, all this kind of stuff, but at the same time, you gotta what's the word I'm looking for? You gotta price match. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's polished. You know, the graphics are all polished up now, but at the end of the day, it's still the same story. It's still the same gameplay. Only thing that's upgraded is the graphics. You know, so you're asking me to pay, you know, $70, you know, premium price, a price I would pay for a brand new game. Like, I mean, like a brand new game, you know, new everything, new story, new everything. And you're asking me to pay $70 just for an increase in graphics. Nah, that's not a fair trade-off. Me personally, it feels like around like $30. Realistically, I would like it to be like around, you know, $20, $25. $30 is fine. $35, yeah. $40 is the most I would go. $40 is the most I would spend. Once you get past the $40, then you're getting to like, you know, premium, you know, premium price asking for a video game. But you're gonna ask me 70? Nah, dog. That's too much. That is too much. So, if you haven't played The Last of Us Part 1 at all, which if you haven't, shame on you. If you haven't played it at all, definitely recommend getting The Last of Us Part 1 for the PS5 if you have one, when the price drops or when it goes on sale. Which it probably will for like Black Friday or whatever. If you have a PS5 and you haven't played The Last of Us at all, I recommend getting it. Only when the price drops. Don't give them $70. In other announcements, Valve, the company behind games such as Half-Life, Left 4 Dead, Portal, and the developers of the online video game marketplace known as Steam, and the creators of the Steam Deck, which is pretty much a competitor to the Nintendo Switch. Only difference is the Steam Deck is literally just a handheld portable game. There's no option to, like, you know, like Switch, you have the docking bay which you put the Switch in and, you know, you can play it off the TV now. The Steam Deck, it's just, you know, handheld, but the trade-off is, you know, the Steam Deck, it actually looks good, it performs good. Like, you actually get, you know, like 1080p, a solid 30 frames per second, and on, you know, and on modern games too. Like, and Nintendo doesn't have, you know, every, you know, game available. You know, there are some games they have a, you know, Nintendo Switch port to, but not every game. You know, on the Steam Deck you can play GTA 5, Call of Duty, I mean all the Call of Duties, Battlefield, Bioshock, Final Fantasy, like any game you could think of, you can play it on Steam because the Steam library consists of so many games. And, you know, the performance is actually good, you know, whereas, you know, if you play it on the TV, if you play, you know, your Nintendo Switch on TV, it looks better, it performs a little better. When you try and play it handheld, the graphics get downgraded and the frame rate, yeah, it gets kind of chuggy at parts. Valve actually just announced that there will be a Steam Deck 2 eventually. Not right now. They just said, hey, we are going to make a sequel to the Steam Deck. I do kind of want a Steam Deck, but also it would be kind of a waste of money for me because I don't really play video games on the go like that. Like, I never really, you know, find myself, you know, going out to play and then, you know, wondering like, oh, I wish I had my game with me right now. You know, it'd be good, you know, if I go on a trip or, you know, on a plane or something. You know, those are kind of nice convenience things to have. But on the daily, like, no, because where do I spend most of my day? You know, I go to work, I come home. And when I come home, I can play video games I want. So really the only use I would get out of the Steam Deck is, you know, when I go to work, and there's really no time for me to go to work. Time for me to play when I'm at work, you know. I get like 2 15-minute breaks and I get like half an hour lunch. you know, there's really no time to play any games. I tried it one time with my Nintendo Switch. Didn't really work out because, you know, I sit in the break room, I play on my Switch, but then I have to go put my Switch back up in my car and have to, you know, run out to my car, put it up, run back in to, you know, clock back in for my lunch. So it's just not ideal. But they're coming out. They're making a Steam Deck 2. So who knows? Maybe by the time Steam Deck 2 comes out, I might, you know, my way of living might have more room for portable gaming. If that's the case, I might get me one this time around, because I've seen, you know, performance videos and, you know, a lot of stuff on the Steam Deck, and it is a really good product and very and for the price, not bad price. So if you're into portable gaming and you're looking for a good alternative, or you're just not like a big gamer, you know, you just want something, you know you just play in your hand, you know, play while you're laying on bed, or, you know, whatever, who knows, maybe the Steam Deck 2 will, you know, be your cup of tea. In other news, BioShock is getting a Netflix movie. It's going to be directed by the same guy who directed The Hunger Games, and the story is going to be written by the same guy who wrote Logan, the Wolverine movie, the last, you know, Wolverine movie that Hugh Jackman did, which both is very, very reassuring that this project might actually turn out to be good, because as we know, like anime, video game movies, they don't really video games don't really translate that well into live action movies. There have been attempts that have been somewhat passable, somewhat decent, but there hasn't really been one where it's like, damn, that was really, really good. You know, there's been some that were like pretty decent, like, and some that are like, they're kind of good in their own charming way. Like, I still like the Mortal Kombat 90s one, but when you kind of look back in it now, it's like, yeah, it's really corny. It's really corny at points, but that kind of adds some of its charm, I guess. I heard Warcraft was pretty decent. Resident Evil, they keep trying to do Resident Evil, but they keep failing. This last Resident Evil movie, they tried to actually follow the storyline of Resident Evil, but the problem is they tried to mash together Resident Evil 1 and 2 together in like an hour and a half movie or something like that. And even then, like, the characters weren't really true to the characters. Like, it was just a terrible mess. Okay, the Street Fighter movie, it's a guilty pleasure of mine. I like it, but I recognize that it's kind of trash. There was actually a Super Mario Brothers movie. That shit was trash. You know, historically, a lot of video game movies have been trash, but this one actually has, you know, some pretty good people behind it. You know, the Hunger Games, the first movie, you know, was fantastic. It was great. And Logan, you know, probably one of the best superhero movies ever. You know, it was really gritty, really dark, and really, you know, sad at points. And, you know, especially, you know, it was a good send-off for Hugh Jackman's, you know, role as Wolverine. So if that writer is gonna be writing the script for BioShock, which the story for BioShock is, it seems like a good fit for him, because it has that kind of gritty, you know, noir kind of feel to it, with this kind of historical disassociation. Like, it's the game, it has a lot of similarities to like the roaring 1920s, like it has like that 19 there was those that roaring 20s aesthetic, but it's kind of disassociated from the fact there's a lot of you know, technology and stuff like that that should be beyond the technology that they had in the 1920s. So like stuff like that. So hopefully that comes out, you know, good. Moving on to anime news. Part 2 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Stone Ocean came out, and I'm not gonna lie. I'm not saying that the anime is bad, but I just don't like how Netflix is handling JoJo's. Me personally, I don't like my anime like brought out in like batches like this. I like to watch it, you know, weekly. It gives me something to look forward to every week, and I feel like it gives it gives the series more, you know, more life. It feels like it's more relevant, you know, for a longer time if it's aired weekly, as opposed to, you know, the episodes are put out in batches, you know, like live action shows like a Stranger Things or something like that, or like a Squid Games, you know, those kind of shows. They can do that because they're more popular, they're more mainstream, they're more known to the average person. Whereas anime, you know, even though anime has gotten a lot more popular in recent years, I feel like it still needs to be released weekly. And even, you know, other streaming services have seen that maybe, you know, giving episodes weekly is the way to do things now. You know, that's why Disney's like a lot of their shows now, they're weekly. They're not, you know, following the Netflix thing where, you know, they just put out all the episodes at once, you know, have fun, go binge it. You know, like Mandalorian, you know, they released an episode like every Friday. Same thing with like Obi-Wan, it was like every Wednesday or whatever, you know. And it felt like, you know, those shows were, you know, they're relevant for a lot longer, as opposed to, you know, if they were put out, all the episodes were put out for like, they came out on a Friday, everyone binged it that weekend and probably talked about it for like a week or two, and then, you know, okay, we'll come back when the next season comes out. And like, and JoJo's like one of like the biggest like anime franchises in the anime community. JoJo's Part 5 Golden Wind, like when that was airing, you could not escape JoJo. It was like in every, you know, anime Twitter account, the endless memes, the like just everything about JoJo's Part 5, you could not escape it. And since it was airing weekly, you know, it was a thing. It was, you know, a trending thing, you know, JoJo Fridays. You know, every Friday there was a new episode of JoJo. But with Netflix doing it how they're doing, they got the rights to JoJo, just putting out these parts. It's like a lot of people didn't even know that, you know, JoJo was coming back. Like, as opposed to like if whatchamacallit, it was weekly, you know, I feel like it would be around more and it would get more the exposure that it deserves. So I hope Netflix changes how they air their anime, like their animes that, you know, they acquire, like their anime originals, whatever. I hope they change their ways and, you know, just put them out weekly, like as they air or whatever. And they don't just keep doing this, like give us like small batches of episodes like months after the fact. Speaking of anime, Netflix is getting some new anime added to their roster. They're getting the 1997 Berserk anime, which I recommend you watch. Anime I previously referenced on What's in My Rotation, Hajime no Ippo, the boxing anime, is coming to Netflix. So now y'all don't got an excuse not to watch Hajime no Ippo. It's on Netflix now. You know, before it was only on Crunchyroll, now it's on Netflix. So go watch it. And it has an English dub, so you have no further excuse. And Monster is coming to Netflix. I've heard a lot of great things about Monster. I've seen it top a lot of like top mangas of all time. I hear it's supposed to be very adult, very very gory, but it's supposed to be really, really great. This probably a great opportunity for me to finally watch it. It's been on my list of like animes to watch for like I don't know how many years now. Just never got around to it, but I might finally get around to it now. It's coming to Netflix. Water break, y'all. Water break. So now you'll have some new animes to watch on Netflix. Moving on. Fans of Hunter x Hunter, we finally have some good news. I've been saying this for a long time. Even when, you know, Togashi said, the creator of Hunter x Hunter said he's coming back, and he made a Twitter, he's, you know, showing pictures of him drawing it. I'm so numb, like so pessimistic to when it comes to Hunter x Hunter. I'm like I don't know why y'all are getting hyped that he's coming back. This man gonna put out like a chapter or two, then dip for like another 4 or 5 years, which I understand why. You know, his health takes priority. This man has a lot of health problems. But also, yes, this is selfish. Yes, it's, I'm not gonna lie, this is somewhat selfish. As a fan, it's like, come on, dog, you at least gotta do something, like something, you know, for this, because like I don't want something to happen to him and then, you know, we never get the conclusion or, you know, whatever to Hunter x Hunter. So I either always said he either has to A, come back and just wrap it up, or B, get some assistance to just, he handles the story part and he gets someone else to do the drawing. Because when it comes to manga, the actual drawing of the art is the most taxing part on the authors, because, you know, they're hunched over, you know, for however many hours, you know, really like hunching over, trying to get into like every detail, whatever, when they're drawing these manga panels. And with Togashi having back problems, it's like, well, just hire someone to do the drawing for you and you just focus on the story. Because in all honesty, his art style is nothing really to like be blown away by. Like, it's not super hard to like if you're an artist or like a manga artist, it's really not that hard to like replicate it or whatever, because it's not that intricate or detailed. Like if it was like a Berserk, like a Kento Miura, then at some level, I'm like, you gotta find some really talented assistants to, you know, to even like keep up your art style. But it could have been done. But with Togashi, his art style ain't that, you know, complicated or whatever, so he could have found some assistants. Well, good news, he actually hired some new assistants to help him with Hunter x Hunter now. I think he's finally gotten to that point where, because for the longest he always said, you know, I would do everything myself, you know, I want to, you know, see it all through to the end myself, you know, I want to do everything, handle the art and writing the story, which to some extent as a creative I can understand, because like if I make a beat or whatever and I feel like, you know, this is great or whatever, but I get like input from, you know, from my friend or whatever, that, you know, like, send that to me, you know, I can, you know, add, you know, little something extra to it, or, you know, hey, let me, you know, help you like mix the beat or whatever, or, you know, master or whatever, you know, sometimes it's a little hard because like I have my own way of doing things, like I feel like I can only make make it sound the way I want it to sound if I do it. But more often than not, you know, some of your best work comes out from when you do hand over some of the workload to another person. You know, it kind of frees you up to focus on other parts, to flesh out further parts. You know, by handing over, you know, the art to someone else, he can now really focus on the story, you know, really even go even further, you know, push the story element to a new level, or really flesh out some of the story elements. You know, I've seen YouTube creators talk about that, you know, some of them, they're like, oh, I want to do everything myself. I want to edit the videos, you know, I want to do the thumbnail, do all that. But you can do that, but it puts more of a workload, puts more stress on you. Whereas opposed, if you actually hire an editor to edit your videos, now you can, that energy you were putting into editing those videos, now you can re-put that energy back into making the content itself, improving the content. So at the end of the day, the moral of the story is, you know, even though you feel like you have to do everything yourself, you know, you don't have to carry the whole weight of the world on your shoulders. You know, more often than not, it's better to, you know, allow someone to help you, or, you know, ask for help. You know, like, hey, I can't carry this all myself, can you help me? And if you do that, you know, 9 times out of 10, your life is far better off for it. So as a Hunter x Hunter fan, this is some really, really great news. Now I'm more optimistic, like, okay, now I can be somewhat excited and optimistic for Hunter x Hunter coming back, the manga at least. An anime, well, who knows, maybe, you know, if Togashi, if Hunter x Hunter starts coming out at a consistent-ish rate, who knows, maybe in a year or two, you know, we might, you know, get the anime back. But only time will tell. One of my anime of the year, Spy Family, I recently saw this article, which it's crazy how much Spy Family blew up. Spy Family blew up so much that the manga, which at the time of this recording, I believe there's only like 9 volumes of it at the moment. I could be wrong, but Spy Family has reached 25 million copies in circulation. That is wild. That's just crazy that the anime had that far of a reach, that Spy Family as a whole, as a series, its manga has 25 million copies in circulation across, you know, the world or whatever. You know, that's really crazy. And it just goes to show you how much the anime / manga industry has really, you know, blew up and risen in the pop culture zeitgeist or whatever. That, you know, kind of like to what I was saying about episode or two of the podcast about music, how it's become so much more accessible. That's why you keep seeing, you know, these crazy numbers of, you know, this artist did this many streams, or, you know, sold this many records or whatever. That and it's same thing kind of applies here to anime and manga, that, you know, it's become so more widely accessible due to its rise in popularity. Because before, you know, anime and manga, you know, it was a real niche thing. So unless you're going to like a specialty store, you know, ordering, you know, from these places like a Funimation or something like that, you couldn't really get anime like that. And manga, you know, you had to, you know, go to Barnes & Noble, you know, get your manga volumes. And even then, they didn't have, you know, like the biggest selection of manga. You know, now when you go to Barnes & Noble, you'll find manga that don't even have anime. You know, before, the only manga you would kind of find in Barnes and Nobles are kind of mangas that kind of had an anime or are getting an anime, or they got popular enough that like stuff like that. So it's just crazy to see how much the anime did for Spy Family, which, if you haven't seen Spy Family, I would highly recommend it. If you want something, you know, well, if you like spy espionage with, you know, some action, some like wholesome family dynamic type stuff, watch Spy Family. It'll give you a nice boost of serotonin if you have like a shitty day or like a shitty week at work or whatever. Watch Spy Family. Part 2 of season 1 comes out October 1st. So if you're going to watch it, you got this month to catch up before part 2 of season 1 comes out. More manga news. This week, the My Hero manga is going on break. It's not going on a full-on hiatus. He's not pulling, you know, like a Togashi where he's gonna go on break for like a couple months or a year or something like that. Nah, he's just, you know, taking a week off from like putting out a chapter. You know, he'll be back, you know, next week or whatever, which is good because now, you know, like I was kind of alluding to with the, like how the Japanese view work or whatever. Now they're kind of giving these manga artists, you know, more breaks now, you know, so they don't end up like a Togashi where, you know, they end up like severe health problems, you know, where their backs, you know, like end up, you know, becoming like their own worst enemy, or, you know, they just, you know, they get sick due to exhaustion, or, you know, or they end up like Kentaro Miura where, you know, due to probably, you know, years of working whatever, you know, they just, you know, they die without their series, you know, realizing, you know, their finalization or whatever. So it's good to see that a lot of these, you know, manga creators and stuff, they're finally getting, you know, the empathy and recognition to, you know, take these breaks, you know, take care of yourself, you know, so you can, you know, keep, you know, putting out, you know, this quality content or whatever. So we don't have another cautionary tale of overworking in the anime and manga industry. For this week, I actually don't have anything for music related topics. It was kind of uneventful, you know, in music land. Not really that much to speak about, honestly. So sorry guys, but there won't be a musical topic point this episode, but I hope you enjoyed this gaming anime episode of the Musical Weeb. I wish y'all a very good week coming forward. I hope y'all enjoy your Labor Day. If you're gonna spend time with your family, spend time with your family. If you're gonna relax, go ahead, chill out. You deserve it, king or queen. This has been episode 4 of the Musical Weeb Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode. Peace, guys.